College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock. Now here's your host, Kevin Nagandi.
Bowl season is almost here. 40 games, including the two semifinal contests on the weekend of December 28th. ESPN college football writer David Hale joining us now. And David ranked the bowls in order. And I want to get your thoughts about that order. But first, every year I get great pleasure of breaking down, all right, what's different about these bowls? Who's a part of it? And my favorite title this year, the Tropical Smoothie Cafe Frisco Bowl, featuring Utah State versus Kent State. When I said that on Bowl Mania on Sunday night, I was like, whoa, all right, we've got a new one. But I think there's a Tony the Tiger Bowl as well. So we've got a variety of creativity in these bowl games. They're not just, something about, weed feeder bowls or fertilizer bowls. We've got some character here, David, leading into these contests.
Listen, I will forever count the Poulon Weed Eater Independence Bowl as one of my all-time favorite bowl names. But yeah, I remember a couple of years ago when they first sponsored the Boca Raton Bowl. I was covering the Orange Bowl that year, and there was, in the little media hospitality suite, there was a whole mess of Cherubundi beverages that you could mix with whatever other beverage you might want to mix it with. And so I got some firsthand knowledge of Cherubundi rather than just the bowl name. But yes, I would agree. I mean, a Tropical Smoothie Cafe Frisco Bowl, that actually sounds like it should maybe have like some quinoa in it. And yeah, maybe some pickled carrots and radishes. It sounds delicious, frankly.
Yeah, Makers Wanted Bahama Bowl. That stands out to me. Of course, the normal ones we're used to, like the Tax Slayer Gator Bowl. Those are the ones that, yes. But the Red Box Bowl, I'm like, okay. Belk Bowl, of course, a consistent name we've seen. But the Tony the Tiger Sun Bowl, and you see the picture of Tony the Tiger. So many great memories. It features Florida State versus Arizona State. I just want to see a picture of Herm Edwards posing with Tony the Tiger during their dinner banquet, right? Getting ready for that contest.
There's no chance that's not going to happen. Herm is definitely going to track down Tony the Tiger for a candid selfie. I have absolutely no doubt about it. It was funny. I had a friend, too, texted me after my article came out and said, I just noticed that there are three different bowls sponsored by companies that lend money for you to buy stuff from the other bowl sponsors. And I was like, it's a very symbiotic relationship, all the bowls that managed to have.
And you have the great job or assignment of breaking down, 1 through 40, the best bowls. And I think it goes without saying, I think everybody in the country believes that no matter what, it all comes down to number one, the top game that we all can't wait to see. That is Clemson versus Ohio State. But you dug pretty deep here into some of these matchups. Let's start at 40. I don't want to go down all of them, but let's start on the bookends. And with 40 there, why would you pick at 40 the Nova Home Loans Arizona Bowl, Wyoming versus Georgia State, to start things off?
So I have a very rigorous credentialing policy for these bowls. It's a very high-end algorithm. I bring in some scientists from MIT. They calculate all the numbers. But really, it comes down to I looked at all the bowls and said, well, which one, if I'm missing one bowl? And I don't miss any bowls this year. I would love to watch all of them because, as I point out, there's no such thing as a bad football game. But that's at the bottom of my list of ones I'm excited about. Wyoming is not a team with a ton of offensive explosiveness. Georgia State, they beat Tennessee in week one, so I guess that's good. And the nice perk is that Tennessee lost in week one to Georgia State, and of course Missouri lost in week one to Wyoming. So as I note in the article, the winner of this game will officially be named the third best team in the SEC East. So
well played.
It has some very big things on the line here for it. But yeah, I'm a fan of the small teams that people don't really pay much attention to. I will watch my share of Akron and UMass during the season because I like to torture myself that way, I guess. But I think the best at ones of these bowl games are the ones when you have those two teams that people don't really watch, and then it turns into like a 65-63 shootout, and everybody on Twitter's talking about them at the same time, and it's like, you know, for the 3 hours out of the year that people care about Louisiana Lafayette or something like that. I find that very entertaining. This game, I think the odds of that happening are fairly low.
Yeah, but I would add to what you just said, too. I mean, we could have like one of these, you know, these games that are in when you're in your rankings in the low 30s or that 40th game where like if it goes into like double overtime, everybody is watching it. Like, and that's the cool thing and the excitement, I think about college football in the postseason. People complain about there's too many bowls. I'm with you. There aren't too many bowls. And if you look at the ratings, everybody agrees. Like the ratings do really well for every single one of these games because I think they want more football. I mean, whether you're a college football fan or you're a guy that likes to, you know, hey, what's the line in this game? I've laid a few, you know, ducats down here and what's the over? And that's why I'm watching Wyoming, Georgia State and with this fear of the over. I think that plays a huge role. And there's going to be so many lulls when we have, you know, the time off. I try to watch every single bowl game just because of that and that factor where I'm just bored. And I kind of want to see how these teams play out when they have different styles and they know nothing about each other. And then we learn a couple things. Oh, that coach went there. Oh, wow. He's in his third year. That's great. Or you find a quarterback who's a superstar in that game. Then you're thinking about the draft and you're like, oh, I remember watching this guy on December 27th. He's pretty good. I think that all plays a role.
I always enjoy with signing day and all these big recruits that sign with all these big name schools. And then a year or two from now, you know, some of them will pan out and some of them will flame out and decide, I'm transferring, and they leave. And you totally miss the news that five-star guy that signed with Alabama just transferred to Miami of Ohio. And then like 2 years after that, you're watching a bowl game at noon on December 23rd. And you're like, oh, yeah, I remember when that guy was on Alabama. Now here he is at Miami of Ohio.
Yes.
It is always, there's a little something in these terrible bowl games for everyone, which is the beauty of it. And even the ones that aren't good, like I remember the Cheez-It Bowl last year, which, speaking of great names for bowl games, Cheez-It Bowl, just terrific. But it was just such a train wreck of a game that it galvanized. Like, I feel like the entire country was like, wow, this is amazing. It was like Sharknado. You have to watch it. It's so bad. It becomes, for at least a few hours, part of the cultural zeitgeist. And I think, especially in this day and age where everybody has a million channels and a million different things that they can watch, it's fun to feel like you're a part of this group setting that's watching this same random bowl game. And the other thing that you pointed out too, which I think is really underappreciated about bowl season, is putting these teams that would never normally play each other, they're from different regions and have very different styles, and putting them together and seeing what happens. Because I think when you do that, it opens up just an assortment of completely random things that can happen on the field. And not all of them end up great, galvanizing, riveting television, but enough of them do that you don't want to miss the next one.
Here's a perfect example of that. When we talk about matchups and you're like, oh, somebody's got a sense of humor. The Mitsubishi Motors Las Vegas Bowl, where, you know, Chris Peterson is coaching his last game at Washington and it's against Boise State. And you're like, you can't draw this up better. I mean, we're going to see this on the first weekend of the bowl season, December 21st on ABC, you know, Saturday night in prime time. And poor Chris Peterson, he's just like, I just want to wrap things up and move on because the stress of the college football game has gotten to me and the grind can wear on somebody. And he's coaching against his beloved Boise State program, and who has a fantastic quarterback who I can't wait to see. Hopefully he'll play in Hank Bachmeyer. But it also, like you said in your write-up, it could be the last game. It looks like it will be the last game for Jacob Eason as a college football player before he goes to the pros. So those are the great storylines that I think are compelling in many of these matchups. When we look at matchups, And these games, can you pull a few out aside from, of course, the big showdown in the Fiesta, of course, Ohio State versus Clemson?
Well, you know, the one that I think a lot of people are sort of on the fence about how excited to get about it is the Citrus Bowl. And if you just look at the names on the jerseys, oh, my, that is a heck of a matchup. with Alabama and Michigan. But then you start wondering, well, how many of those guys are actually going to get out on the field to play? And we know probably a couple of Alabama guys certainly will take it off. But even then, you get to get an early taste of some of the guys who might be stars for Alabama next year. I'm not one that gets super upset about guys deciding to sit a bowl game out, because to me, for every Christian McCaffrey that sits it out, and it's a bummer you don't get to see him, you get maybe a taste of who's about to break through the following year. I remember that sort of happened with Lamar Jackson a few years ago in his freshman year at Louisville. It was the bowl game in his freshman year where you kind of said, oh boy, this guy could be something special next year, and certainly he was, went out and won a Heisman. So, the Citrus Bowl is certainly one that I would look at and say, I don't exactly know who all the players will end up being out on the field for sure, but when you put two blue bloods like that together, who doesn't want to watch that game? But I get excited about even some of the really small teams that get a chance to play on a bigger stage. And I kind of joked about Louisiana Lafayette earlier, but the job that Billy Napier has done there has been tremendous. And if you follow them at all this year, they've been one of the more exciting offenses to watch in college football. In the Sun Belt Championship game, they were down, I think, 28 to App State and came back and made it a game at the end. That's the type of team that you get excited about watching in a bowl game, because it's the only game in town for that day, and you wouldn't normally sit down and watch a Louisiana Lafayette football game, but it's on, and oh, hey, turns out this team's pretty fun.
Yeah, I'm with you 100%. And there's another storyline that could play into this, and we saw that last year when Texas beat Georgia, and, you know, Ellinger makes the statement about Texas being back, and, you know, I know a lot of people rode that and had fun with it, but in reality, that carried a base for 8 months, right? I mean, whether it was accurate or not, and obviously a disappointing season for Tom Herman and Ellinger, not so much him, but everybody around him who couldn't stay healthy. I think it plays a huge role for many of these programs looking to build off of it. And the opposite is like how Florida dominated Michigan. Now, granted, a lot of guys for Michigan on that defense didn't play, but I mean, Michigan, that was a long winter for them to question some things, where the way they played against Florida and the bad taste in their mouth, that played a huge role in the setting the rest of the season and the offseason up. And then you're doing I did a spring game at Florida, and they're riding the wave 4 months later about how things are turning around completely under Dan Mullen. So I think those storylines play a huge role for some of these major programs looking to hang on something to carry them with their fan bases in the entire offseason.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's no doubt about that, whether or not reality is based on what happens in a bowl game, the narrative absolutely is. And the football season is much shorter than, as Steve Spurrier called it, talking season. Talking season lasts the better part of 7-8 months. And so you better leave something good to talk about. And as you said, I mean, I'd much rather, regardless of how the season actually played out, if you got to sit there and listen to your rival fans make fun of you and tease you and taunt you for an entire offseason, you'd sure rather be Texas listening to debates with Texas A&M and Texas Tech fans and Oklahoma fans after you just beat Georgia in a Sugar Bowl than be Michigan and having to listen to Ohio State fans all year. I mean, that's just the way it goes. But you know, the funny thing is, I don't know. I don't know how much there's always carryover. I think I'm not a big believer in momentum from one game to the next, and certainly not from one season to the next. But sometimes you do get a taste of, okay, something, the pieces seem to all be here. And you mentioned the Texas game last year, but I was just out a couple of days ago and TV was on and they were showing the Rose Bowl between Michigan and Texas from, I guess it was the end of the 2004 season. And I remember just watching Texas in that game with Vince Young and thinking, oh boy, this Texas team is fun. Wonder what they'll be like with Vince Young next year. And of course they go out and win a national championship and playing one of the truly great college football games of all time against USC that year. So sometimes you really do get a sneak peek of what is to come. And we will, regardless of whether it's true or not, in our job, we will go ahead and decide that it's a sneak peek and talk about it for the next 9 months anyway, because we need something to talk about.
And there's also one thing, and you know, whether it's right or wrong, it's just reality. The Rose Bowl game is completely different, right?
It
actually means something, even if it doesn't mean anything. Every single year, I tell any college football fan, if you have the chance to go to the Rose Bowl for the Rose Bowl game, go. No matter who is playing, just go, because there's nothing like it. The setting is incredible. And now we have Oregon versus Wisconsin. This doesn't feel like one of those games where, who knows who's going to play? We're not sure. No, this means something to both these programs, to both the conferences involved. And it's Oregon versus Wisconsin this year. And I can't wait for that matchup. You have this number 3 on your top 40 list, and I'm in complete agreement. Outside the two semifinal games, this is the game.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, here's the thing. Like you said, plug in like a Mad Libs, just plug in two team names and say it's at the Rose Bowl, and that's a game I want to watch, because the history, the tradition, the setting, the from parade to post game, everything about that game is, I mean, it's just college football in a nutshell. I mean, you tune it in, and whoever's calling it, there's just this little voice in your head of Keith Jackson, right? That's introducing the game, whether it's, that's, you know, whoever's calling it. It's one of those games that you just don't miss. And it just so happens that this year, I think that you're getting two really, really good teams. I mean, look, Wisconsin had Ohio State on the ropes in that Big Ten title game, and Ohio State might be the best team in the country. So I don't think there's any doubt that Wisconsin is very good. And then Oregon, boy, they're a few tough bounces away from being in that playoff. And it's funny to think back. We talk a lot about how college football is the one sport where every game matters. And you think back to that week one loss to Auburn and how well Oregon had played throughout the vast majority of that game and just fall short late. And that's a playoff team if they don't. So you're getting, as a compensation prize, Rose Bowl ain't too bad. And again, yeah, I would never miss a Rose Bowl. And again, as you said, if you can get some tickets and pack up the car and take the kids out for a game at the Rose Bowl, boy, you absolutely have to do it. But that, you know, that leads to another very good question of, aside from the matchups or the tradition, bowl locations.
Yes.
Like, it'd be funny if we ranked bowl games, like if the best teams went to the bowl games with the best look, like Hawaii and Bahamas Bowls would be at the top of the list of bowl games if you just let people choose their location.
Yes, there's no doubt about it. You get the trip to go to the Bahamas, like Steve Levy. I think he's gonna be the play-by-play of that game until, like, honestly, they tell him you're off. I think he's going to do that until he's 100, because it's
just
a phenomenal
into his
game.
Contract. And I don't blame him one bit.
Yeah, and McElroy's there, and McElroy and I were talking earlier this week. He was so pumped up for the experience. They roll out the red carpet for anybody that attends the Bahama Bowl, and I know they're going to have a good time there. We'll have much more on the bowl talk on the other side with David Hale, but first, let's hear from Allstate and AT&T, because mayhem on Saturdays in the fall is inevitable. Mayhem happens on the field, off the field, and in the polls. Mayhem lives on the wind, in the rain, on the foot of an errant kick, and during a trap game. You'll find mayhem in the parking lot, during tailgates, charcoal that's not totally out, an errant football through a window, a flat tire, a lost side view mirror, etc. You get the point. Allstate protects you from mayhem in the parking lot and outside it, at home and away. You can't stop mayhem from happening, but you can get better protected from it with Allstate. The potential for mayhem during the playoff race is rampant. Underdogs, trap games, unexpected weather, etc., etc., etc. Get better protected from mayhem with Allstate. Contact your local Allstate agent today.
Yeah, college football is great unless, of course, it's just okay. Like when students decide to paint their chests with different letters to spell some word, and then they stand together to get on TV, but they're spelling the word wrong, or they lined up in the wrong order. Sure, not everybody's an English major, and I get it. We can't all win the national spelling bee. But come on, people. You should know how to spell Wildcats or Bulldogs. The purpose isn't to have a word jumble in the student section to keep your mind sharp or something. Just okay is not okay, whether it's college football fans or your wireless network. You want to watch the best college football, just like you want to go with AT&T, America's best network. Don't settle for typos on people's chests, and don't settle for anything less than the best wireless network. Get the best college football and get AT&T. Best network based on GWS One Score, September 2019.
Interesting, you know, for me, when we talk about the New Year's Six, no matter who is coming from the Group of Five, I always want to see the Group of Five team that's going to be represented there. And I know, you know, for the power conferences, it's like we want nothing to do with the Group of Five because we know this is their national championship. You have this as a surprise. You have Penn State, Memphis, the Goodyear Cotton Bowl Classic as your fourth best bowl game matchup. Why do you have that there?
I mean, I think part of it is exactly that. When you're watching bowl games, it's a little bit like the first weekend of the basketball tournament where everybody's kind of rooting for the underdog. You can galvanize people by the underdog story. Well, that New Year's Six game that features the Group of Five team, you've got the inherent underdog. I mean, whether it was UCF the last few years and we're back to the Boise State and Utah years when they were in it every year, it's fun to root for the underdog. And Penn State makes for a very good blue tradition. I mean, we're not sending UCF out to play whatever the hot team of the year was in the Power Five. Penn State is a blue blood. That is a big name. So to me, it's like you've got this whole plenty of good reasons to watch Penn State, and they're a very good, very fun team to watch too. But then you put them up against the little engine that could type of team in Memphis, and a Memphis team that is now going out to do it without its coach, but has some terrific players. And if you've not watched Kenny Gainwell play this year as a college football fan, you're missing out. I mean, this guy kind of was thrust into action in week one after their starting running back went down, and he has done nothing but be an explosive superstar all year. There's just not a lot of games where you get both the drama and the star power and all that comes with it that you don't have to be a fan of either team. I think you can be excited about watching a Penn State game because it's Penn State. And I think you can be excited about watching Memphis go up in a game like that because if you're not a Penn State fan, hey, let's root for the underdog.
Is there a coach, and I'm not jumping from A to Z here, is there a coach that you think feels any pressure to win a bowl game this season? I'm not putting him on the hot seat in the middle of December, but with the way fan bases have expectations and the way a season could wrap up with disappointment, do you see a coach that must win this year in the next three
weeks?
I
mean, I think a lot of it goes back to sort of what you were saying about what is the offseason narrative. And if you're Jim Harbaugh, boy, a win over Alabama changes the narrative for you a good bit. And it's funny, the last few days I've just sort of randomly run into a handful of Michigan fans and alumnus, and they're all like, why are we keeping Harbaugh? And I'm like, he's not so bad. But that's the position I think that Michigan fans are in right now, where they're like, how many times do we need to come up short? How many long off seasons do we have to spend saying, why did we lose to Ohio State again? Why didn't we win our big time bowl game? What are we doing next season? How are things going to get as a college football fan, the worst thing you want to do is go into January not feeling good about September. And that's sort of where Michigan is right now. But a win for Michigan, I think, changes that narrative enough that I don't know. Will they be a flash in the pan like Texas was? It's impossible to say from one game. But I know if I'm a Michigan fan, I feel a lot better about spending the next 6 or 7 months talking about how we just won a big bowl game than I do saying, boy, how is Jim Harbaugh, after all these years, finally going to get things turned around this time? So Harbaugh, I think I would put, again, you're right, not a hot seat situation, but I would put him at the top of the list of guys whose life gets a lot better if they win a bowl game.
Yeah, I'm with you. I would even throw in Tom Herman with Texas, considering a year ago what they did against Georgia and their matchup here against Utah. I'm not saying he must win, but they need something to feel good about. And then we could kind of figure out what happened to Utah. I joked around, at least it's not a Friday night game that we've seen from the Utes. It's on a Tuesday night, December 31st, New Year's Eve on ESPN. And I really am intrigued by that matchup. Yeah, I'm not talking about matchups here, but you brought up one really interesting point. Bringing up that 2004 Rose Bowl and watching Texas and Vince Young. let's just stick with the same coach, and that is Mac Brown. He's got a really special kid, a quarterback at North Carolina, in Sam Howell.
Yep.
And he's a freshman, 35 touchdowns. He was a guy that, you know, was going to go to Florida State, changed his mind when Mac got the gig. Mac made sure, you know, the local kid would stay in North Carolina. They take on my alma mater, Temple. I'm not shy about how much I love the Owls and how much I love their toughness and their defense. But Sam Howell's one of those guys I think could have a breakout game in the bowl season. Is there a guy that you think out there that could have a breakout game where you're like, ooh, they're going to ride it the same way you brought up Lamar Jackson?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's, you pointed to one, I think, that is a really good one. And look, Sam Howell's been tremendous all year, and the numbers that he has put up, there's just not a lot of guys that have done that. But because Carolina is a 6-6 team, because they're really in rebuild mode, I'm not sure how many people have seen him. I sure hope people watch this one, because of course they should turn in to see Temple and and cheer on the fight in Kevin Agandis. But a chance to see Sam Howell on the big stage too, boy, people should really watch. And it's funny, I've had some folks kind of talk to me about personality-wise that they see him as sort of a Baker Mayfield type of guy, where he's just sort of like, the fact that you even think you can beat him, he gets annoyed by it. And he's just got this really killer instinct to him. And that has shown through this year on a team that has talent. I don't think Carolina was talentless, but they're thin. They're a work in progress. And 6-6 was a huge stretch for a team that had won 5 games total in the last 2 years. And I think the reason that they're where they are, certainly a good bit of that goes to Mac Brown, but a lot of it goes to Sam Howell and how quickly he has developed in the way that he has played. So, yeah, I mean, I would certainly put him fairly high up on the list. But when you start talking about some of the younger quarterbacks across the country in general, I think there's some good guys. You mentioned Hank Bachmeier, and I sure hope he plays, because that, just beyond all the other storylines in that Vegas Bowl, Jacob Eason versus Hank Bachmeier could be an awfully fun QB matchup there. And Jaden Daniels at Ohio State, yes, at Arizona State, going up against Florida State in the Tony the Tiger Bowl. He's a guy who's really had some highlights throughout the year too. And you can see, look, Herm's done a good job with recruiting. They're bringing in some good players. That's a defense that's played well throughout most of the year. And he certainly was not consistent this year, but he showed plenty of flashes. And you can see maybe him going out against a blue blood team like Florida State and putting on a show, and that being sort of a good jumping off point for next year. So we've got a lot of fun young quarterbacks, I think, that are going to get a chance to go out there and showcase their skill sets in a bowl game. And Sam Howell and Hank Bachmeier and Jaden Daniels will certainly all be on that list. And Keaton Slovis at USC is probably another one that belongs in that conversation.
Really good crop of freshman quarterbacks making a big impact this season. Let's stay in the ACC. You mentioned Mac and the turnaround. It's amazing how a different vibe is in the first year, where Mac had to basically say, all right, well, I'm going to pick up the pieces. And Manny Diaz, who said, well, I'm going to revive these guys, and the U is back, and clearly a disappointing year. What's at stake for him in a game like this against Louisiana Tech? And when we're talking about walk-ons, Independence Bowl, again, it's the U. And it just feels like you can't afford to lose to Louisiana Tech if you're talking about momentum in your first year and trying to find progress on how he's trying to develop this team, because Miami's dropped 8 of their last 9 bowl games.
Yeah, it's a bad situation there. And you know, the crazy thing is Miami beat Virginia. They were, if they had beaten a bad Georgia Tech team and a bad Duke team, neither of whom made a bowl game, if Miami had won those two games, they would have been the one playing Clemson for the ACC championship this year. That's how close they were to that. And of course, the loss to FIU was, I think, could be argued the most embarrassing loss in the program's history.
That was rock bottom.
That's where we're at.
Rock bottom.
That's where we're at with Miami right now. And then you add in Louisiana Tech, who is good enough to be, certainly to be dangerous. And I don't know that a win or a loss here in this game necessarily changes what Manny Diaz can be as a coach. And I like Manny a lot. He understands the history at Miami. I think he's a very good advocate for Miami. I think he's doing as much as can be done with what is a flawed team right now. And I think people forget, because they managed to play good enough at times this year. But when they were walking off the field after that Pinstripe Bowl loss to Wisconsin last year, I thought Miami's going to be lucky to win three games next year, because that was just a train wreck at the end of last season. And then Mark Richt leaves and Manny comes in and got some transfers and managed to kind of put some Band-Aids on bullet wounds there. But it was not going to be enough to get them ahead. And so to me, when you have a team like that, where there's a lot that needs to be done, just making the bowl game and having those extra couple of weeks of practice can go a long way. And so to me, what's a big question is, these 2 weeks, is this just two more weeks of the same slog that it was at the end of the season? Or were these 2 weeks well spent in getting Jaren Williams better prepared and better developed? And was it, did we help the offensive line where they had a couple of young tackles that were problematic this year? Did they get better in the back end of the defense? Those are big questions, because it can go either way. I mean, a lot of people talk about bowl practices being important because it's a chance to take a step back from the day-to-day grind of the season and refine some of those things that really needed refining. And that can be true. But when you've ended a season as badly as Miami has, simply having to get up and go to practice for another two more weeks can be a bad thing too. I think it'll be a real test of who Manny Diaz is as a head coach. We know he's a good coordinator. As a head coach, these next couple of weeks and what the performance that they put on in the bowl game, I think it says a lot about where the future is.
Excellent point, especially when they're trying to figure out their quarterback situation and try to find stability. You get those extra practices in, they could go a long way. And Williams, he looked so good when it came to promising talent in that opener against Florida, and you thought they could build off of it and develop him, and we haven't been able to see any type of consistency from the quarterback position. Let's stay in the ACC here, and you know all about the entire conference and the talent that's in the conference. I do want to talk to you about Dabo as he, you know, continues to double down his comments from late November. You're laughing now because I find it funny here on the turn here, because Clemson counted out, you know, they're the, if this was a BCS, they'd be the third team. They'd be on the outside, and Dabo's saying, we've got to win 30 straight. If we don't, we can't afford any, you know, hiccups here. But then when you look at the line, they're favored by 2 points going into that contest against Ohio State. So now the Buckeyes, it looked like they were the most complete team in the country, could play the, hey, nobody believes in us. So everybody, everybody believes in everybody else but these two teams. When you look at Clemson and Dabo and his frustration this season, how would you, you know, sum the whole thing up? How would you sum up and grade this Clemson team as you cover this conference?
Yeah, it's funny. I talked to Trevor Lawrence the other day, and he was giving his version of the Dabo speech, and, well, you know, it's just the narrative and nobody believes in us, and that's why we weren't up for any awards at the end of the year, and all of that whole speech. I'm thinking, this guy just walked off of a field after destroying Alabama to win a national championship as a true freshman less than a year ago. How in the heck is he sitting here being able to say these things now? But it's sort of the magic of the sort of bubble that teams can live in during the season. And it's one of Dabo's best magic tricks, is that he manages to convince Clemson every year that now they're the punchy little underdog that's still got something to prove. I don't know how he does it. It is a Houdini-esque magic trick, but he certainly does a good job of it. And look, I do think that I don't even think Clemson has really been criticized this year so much as they've just been on the periphery of the conversation, because they haven't played someone who has truly been at the same talent level as them. So we haven't gotten to see, how does this year's Clemson team respond when they are not getting off the bus as the better team? And so I think that's a reasonable critique of this team, because we don't know. And I think if you're going to beat Ohio State, if you're going to slow down Justin Field, the key has to be your pass rush. And as good as Clemson has been defensively this year, and statistically they're better than they were last year, we haven't seen them truly challenged up front. And it's not the same guy. It's not Christian Wilkins. It's not Cleveland Farrell. It's not Dexter Lawrence. It's not Austin Bryant. These are certainly talented guys, but guys who have not faced the same type of challenge before. And I think the Big Ten championship game is a perfect example of Wisconsin got after the quarterback in the first half and had a lot of success. Justin Fields wasn't under pressure in the second half, and that's when the game changed. Clemson has to be able to rattle Justin Fields has to be able to disrupt what Ohio State wants to do offensively. And quite frankly, I think that's a looming question because we have not seen Clemson in a game where that was going to be even a remote challenge for them so far this year.
Now, the one thing on the other side that they have is the firepower. When you look at Lawrence, Etienne, and the wide receivers, the last six games for Trevor Lawrence, obviously, the beginning of the year, one of the big storylines were the eight picks. Last six games, 20 touchdowns, no picks. What do you think was the difference? There are some theories about injury, and maybe he was nursing something. And if you say that around Dabo loud enough, good luck. He will he will make sure that you won't cover Clemson again. I'm saying that jokingly, but he will let you have it. He will light you up because he's going to defend his quarterback and not make excuses. But what did you see from Trevor Lawrence from the first half of the season to the second half of the season as you covered the team?
I think it was probably a combination of a few things. I don't think that there was this massive injury that was causing real problems because I saw him make enough of those throws that you think no other quarterback in college football is making that throw. But I also wonder if he was just dinged up enough that making those throws was a thing he could really wind up and do two or three times a game, but not 10 or 11 times a game. And so there was a little bit of maybe working through that. I think a lot of it, though, was just a guy who was going into his sophomore year coming off one of the truly most successful freshman campaigns anyone has ever had in college football at that position, with all the hype and all the attention, and him coming in and saying, okay, I'm Superman. I gotta be Superman, and trying to do some things that he shouldn't have done. And if you look back, and the number of eight picks is certainly a number that looks gaudy and bad on the stat sheet. But if you watch the actual plays that he threw those interceptions, it was just some bad decision-making. It really wasn't like the mechanics were bad or a really offline throw. It was just some poor decision-making. And if you're Trevor Lawrence, then you know that you can do better than that. And I think that's what we've seen. I think we've seen him play smarter football in the second half. I think we've seen him realize that, hey, I got this guy Travis Etienne in the backfield who's pretty darn good too. Why don't I just hand him the football if I don't see something I like? Or why don't I pick up and run a little bit more, which he has done a great job of this year when a play isn't really developing downfield. I think it was just him wanting to kind of be the hero with every throw in the early season. And as the season progressed, he realized, I don't need to do that to be good. And that's shown up on stat sheet the rest of the way.
David, final question here, and I think it's a relevant question down the road as we see Clemson's dominance and wonder about Miami and the future of Florida State. It is, and we've seen the rotation, the full circle of the Coastal. Who's the closest team you think to give Clemson a run in the ACC?
Man, that's a good question because talent-wise, I think you'd probably point to Florida State and say, look, they're the team that is bringing in the most blue chip guys comparatively. That distribution of blue chip guys hasn't been what it needs to be. So they've had some positions like the offensive line that have just been a train wreck, and they need to get better in those areas. And the production of those blue chip guys has not been great. I mean, I think they went into the season, you would have said on paper, one of the best defensive lines in the ACC, if not in the country, and it just didn't. They didn't play like that this year. So it's a little bit of both things for Florida State. But I like Mike Norvell. I think he's clearly shown that offensively he can be a real program builder, and he's got the pieces to play with there. Now I don't know how you take a team that has won 11 games in 2 years and turn them into a team that is going to compete with Clemson in 2020. But I at least think there's enough pieces there that with the right coaching and the right approach that they can be more competitive, certainly, than they have been. But, I mean, you can make the case that Louisville has certainly been on the upswing and is a fun team to watch, and maybe Scott Satterfield gets them there. And Dave Clawson's done wonderful things at Wake Forest, but Wake Forest is never going to have the same type of talent or athletes that Clemson does. At this point, it's hard to make a case without really stretching the logic to say somebody is going to push a still Trevor Lawrence led Clemson team in 2020. It's a hard thing to say.
Yeah, it is. And we touch base on it, and you just hope a guy like Mack Brown and Sam Howell, maybe in 2 years, right, we'll see how that plays out. as he develops. And Mac's probably going to have a pretty big day here when it comes to recruiting. The biggest key is the fence he's trying to build around North Carolina to avoid Georgia as well as Clemson from raiding all the talent there. You know, David, this is great. I appreciate you joining us, breaking it down, getting us ready for the bowl season. I know you're going to enjoy all 40 games.
Absolutely. I look forward to I'll have my box of Cheez-Its with me, my Tony the Tiger costume. I'll be ready for the whole thing.
Take care, buddy. Big thanks to David Hale for joining us as we look forward to the bowl games coming up. Also want to thank our sponsors, AT&T and Allstate. Excellent work from our producer, Taylor Schwenk, on the other side. If you enjoyed this podcast and you want more, all you have to do is subscribe to the College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock. And, of course, remember to subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts. We appreciate it. Next week, want to promise you, Herb Street Pollock will get their thoughts leading into the semifinal matchups. Enjoy the week.